Bandwidth and hosting for the British Tech Network is provided by UK2.net. Innovative, affordable, and reliable web hosting. Hello, welcome to Mac. It's the Mac Show. Yes, we're here. The weekend starts after we finish this show. And to help us get there successfully, we've got a stunning panel to discuss the week in Apple. Starting top left from the MacCast, Adam Christensen. How you doing, buddy?
Good. How you doing? Howdy.
That clock's finally moving.
I know. I fixed it.
Good man. You've only been coming on a year.
The ones who complained about it?
I didn't know it was. I think it was just like a sword of Damoclesy type thing that you had over the speaker, and if the speaker played up, it would be. But no, it works. It's a clock.
Yeah. The funny thing is they're on separate batteries. So I think the clock was actually working, just the little pendulum thing. So it's fake. The pendulum doesn't do anything other than then swing and be distracting.
The whole world's nothing but a green screen and a painted backdrop. Have you been well?
My head's getting chopped off. I've been good.
You've been good? Excellent.
That's better.
I thought you were framed okay.
No, I went too high.
Never mind. Great. Next to him. Joining us all the way from Boston. Still snow there, I gather. Andy and Ackley.
Diminishing snow, because now that's been replaced by like lots and lots of rain and lots of wind. So as a result, I can no longer figure out exactly where the critters are walking through my backyard anymore, because now it's mostly green, or rather brown, patchy green.
But with a man of your kind of tracking skills, surely that's no object.
I feel as though now this is kind of extends into how I feel about Google Glass. I think that whatever personal lives of the groundhogs and the chipmunks and the squirrels and the foxes, I feel as though I don't need to pry into those lives. I mean, if they wish to share it with me, then fine. If they have posted something on their Facebook wall, I will read that. But I feel as though when they are just cutting through my yard to get to the brook, they have a right for me not to be looking at them doing that.
I know your middle name is Sacagawea or whatever it was. I know your middle name is Sacagawea.
No, that's my confirmation name. There's another kid in my confirmation class who already chose Loyola. So,
very good. Underneath him, in the new pad, Kelly Gamont with a bar in a bedroom.
Next door to the office.
I lied about the bar in the bedroom, but that would be cool. Are you pleased? You got a big grin, Mrs.
Yes, I really like it here. We have more space and bar, and it's stocked, and all of those things make me.
Well, you bought the house with a stocked bar.
No, it came with the bar. We stocked it.
Okay.
But that was one of the first things we moved. There are no mattresses in the house yet, but the bar is fully stocked.
If anyone ever wants to sell me a property,
priorities.
If anyone ever wants to sell me a property, all they've got to do is make sure it has a bar, which is fully stocked, and I'll pay what you want. It's fine. It's done. And finally, last but my name is least, Dr. Happy Mac with a ringing phone.
Yeah, just the minute I thought I can't mute this because you're going to come to me right now when the phone
gotcha. Go do your business, mate, and we'll get back to you.
No, it's not. It's the house phone. I mean, obviously, I'm not allowed anywhere near my office.
No, because that would be your wife's office.
That would be sacrilegious to think that I could sit there. There's no room at the moment anyway. It's absolutely jammed to the rafters with iMacs. So.
Oh, I thought you were going to say curtains.
Well, that too, yes. Yeah.
Right. Have you been well, sir?
I've been good. I've been completely mentally busy. I've been basically just kicking back and lying on the sea of money that's been pouring in from all the apps that have been developed.
Oh, mate, have you stitched them together into a bedsheet?
The money?
Yeah.
Yes. It comes in faster than I can stitch it, which is gratifying.
Apple have paid more than $4 billion to developers, and actually should read developer.
Yes, yeah. Or, in fact, not yesterday, was it the day before? I think I've sold a grand total of 4 apps. So,
how many have you really total?
Yeah, out of the 4 that they're on the store. No, I mean, in total more than 4, but yesterday, the other day, 4.
That's
Discovery
all
right. is a hard game to play.
Hmm, it is. Tell me about it. I've done podcasting for 4 years, mate. It's bloody impossible.
Yeah.
We've had some emails. We've had some reviews. Thank you very much. I keep looking over here and the camera's there. I've had a little move around on my screen and it's thrown me. The first one is from Tony. Tony sent us a lovely email. He said, "Hi, Ewan. Just wanted to say thanks for posting the wrong show in the Mac feed the other week. I got to listen to the big show for the first time, and I have to say, it's rather good. Nice to get a quick fire run through the high points of the week as a whole and not just the newsless Maciverse. Cheers, Tony." Thanks, mate. Really appreciate that. If you haven't listened to any of the shows, we got some great shows. Media Show is quality. I listen to Media out of choice. It's one of the podcasts. And Gamer is another one that I listen to out of choice as well. We've got the iOS show. There's loads and loads and loads of stuff. So do try them. You'll like them. John Fash left us. I don't know if it's John Fash as in Awuga, which won't mean anything to the Americans, but he's John Fash and he was a footballer over here. And he said, "I felt compelled to write a review on this podcast. I've got a 45-minute each-way commute to work and I can't put up with the crap on the radio. I first got into the program when deciding whether to buy a Mac or not. I wanted to see what type of apps were available and the main differences between Mac and Windows. What I got from this podcast was an hour plus of entertainment, informative discussion, and a good laugh. I'm now subscribed to the majority of the British Tech Network podcasts and can't recommend them enough. Please keep up the good work, guys, and consider, wink, wink, giving John Fash a shout out for the next episode. P.S. I still don't know about the apps and the differences between Mac and Windows, and I still don't own a Mac."
Well, no mention for him then.
Okay, John. John Fash.
Yeah, John. Bad John.
Buy one, and then send us your questions. We'll answer them.
There you go. So you've got some. You got the glitterati of Mac here, mate. You've got Andy Anatko. You've got Adam Christensen. You've got Kelly Gamont, and you've got Dr. Happy Mac, and they're all saying, "John, buy a Mac.
Get a Mac. Yeah,
get a Mac."
Well, sorry.
You won't be sorry.
I actually just wanted to say that, John, we love you whether you have a Mac or not. We want to have a big. We want to have a big tent here. Some of us, of course, because Apple really does love those profit margins, unfortunately are priced out of the market, but that doesn't mean we think less of you. We're not shutting you out. We hopefully that Apple will sometimes, maybe they'll start selling t-shirts, and so people can now afford at least the minimum, will probably be a $38 t-shirt, because it will have to be the best t-shirt ever made, but still, something something more practical.
Dr. Happy Mac could probably send you a few P from his booming app sales.
Oh, see.
Yeah, you could get sponsorship. Yeah,
them's my peas. You leave my peas alone.
There you go,
there's
John.
There's a place just down the road from us which sells t-shirts for £117.
You're joking. Not like T-shaped t-shirts, not with any buttons or...
White t-shirts with nothing on them.
Blimey. See you coming.
Well, not me, but some of the other locals, certainly.
John, get a life. Get a Mac. Adzi UK says, "Great guests, great hosts, great topics, discussions, and of course, there's Will Green." Not this week. Who could complain? "I always listen to the show and never miss an episode." Chippy the Courier says, "I've been subscribed to the podcast for the last year and find it both informative and often light-hearted entertainment. The guys and girls are real Mac enthusiasts and show a real interest in all things Apple. Superb. Thank you for your work in creating the podcast." Big Russ says, "I've been watching the Mac Show and BTN Network for a while and it's one of the best British podcasts to watch." I don't know if that's a compliment or not. They have great guests and have great info, but making it fun to watch with great banter, and I look forward to the next episode. Keep going, Mr. Rankin. Someone did send me a letter once saying that British podcasting was like watching British porn. It's crap.
But, lots of apologising?
Well, I had to go out straight away and look and watch lots of British porn to see what he was talking about. But never mind. The Week in Mac. Has anything really stood out this week much in the news ways? Because there's not...
No.
The App Store went down, didn't it?
The
Apple Store went down.
They revamped the ordering process. When you actually purchase something through the store, not the hardware that you buy, just the purchase process is a little smoother and some of it's been laid out a little differently.
Did that make you salivate?
No. Really, because I do still go occasionally and spec out something and wish. So
you can no longer buy Mac Pros in Europe.
Yeah, I was going to say, they did finally creep up and hit the Mac Pro on the back of the head with a shovel, didn't they?
Mm. They're no longer.
They send them off to live on a farm.
Daisy Hill Puppy Farm.
Yes.
They're all in Liverpool.
What happens to my Mac Pro when it's not legally sellable anymore?
Well, no, I think you all think, you see, this is the false sense of security, because Apple, you all think that Apple have now removed the Mac from sale in Europe, but actually they haven't. They've just all been delivered to Don.
Oh.
That's why he can't come on the show today, because he's setting up his Macs.
So after he was done buying all the minis, now he's moved on to pros?
Oh, man, he's going to have to buy a new jet just so he can ship them over. You know, Mac mules.
The problem is that the Mac Pros are going to be a lot harder to, like, stuff down someone's pants when they go through customs. I'm sure he'll find someone. I'm sure whoever he finds will be able to find a lot of dates on the plane.
What was the actual reason that the EU wouldn't? Was it because you could stick your fingers in the fan when it was running?
No,
is that what they didn't like?
You guys have some new law regarding the power supplies.
It's the grade of the cabling, isn't it? It's the grade of the cabling, I think.
Yeah.
It's to do with the type of cabling that was being used, and it would cause a redesign. They couldn't just rewire them all the back stock. So.
Yeah.
But I think we salute you, cheese grater style half ton piece of finger slicing off goodness.
Yeah.
Now there was an Apple authorized retailer here in town named MacForce. They're not around anymore. They do just training. They don't have the retail section, but they actually did. Everybody calls this thing the cheese grater. Will it grate cheese? And they did a video on it.
And did it grate cheese?
I'm not going to give away the ending. You can go find
it. I would have thought it was a bit more like a garlic press for cheese. You could push it through it, but you wouldn't really get much scrape because it's not serrated on the edges.
I kind of feel like you just set your nachos in front of it and the cheese melts, but I don't... Yeah.
Yeah, you could melt the cheese through the holes.
Yeah, because they're certainly toasty. The only interesting thing to me about this is not that the Mac Pros are actually gone, because apparently the law went into effect this year, but it was... created some time ago.
Yeah, you get like a changeover, carryover period. Yeah.
So whatever the grace period was, the grace period is now over. It's actively being enforced. And so Apple knew it was coming. You know, it's not like the EU snuck up on them one day and went, surprise, no more Mac Pros in the EU anymore. So that wasn't necessarily the thing. What is interesting to me is the speculative piece of this. And most of the time, I'm not interested in the speculation. But in this one, I actually am, because we've been hearing the vague overtures from Uncle Tim about new Mac Pros coming in the future, et cetera, et cetera. And I'm curious if this is something that is an unfortunate side effect of Intel delaying their new server chips. Because if those were released, I think that's what's holding up the Mac Pro. This is just me talking.
Mm-hmm.
I don't have any proof of any of this, but I do know that Intel has delayed some of its server chipsets. And I know that been hearing Mac Pros were coming. It makes sense that this chip is the thing that they're waiting on in order to release new ones. And I think that this was just an unfortunate side effect of some bad timing.
Yeah, I agree with that. So definitely.
I want to see the new ones, and I hope they're cool. I hope it's still an interesting case. I think this is the longest in a long time, I think, and you guys can probably tell me for certain on this. This is the longest that a machine, that any hardware from Apple has looked the way that it looks without being redesigned. Like once they settled on the cheese grater case, we've had the cheese grater case for a long, long time.
But it still stands up
since 2010, I think. I have my dates right.
I thought it was a little further back than that.
I have a G5 Mac Pro that has that exact same design.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I'm thinking of,
yeah. I mean, stands up.
Not the chip. And I think it's been around the longest because we had the gray and white ones. That didn't last very long. The blue and white was first. I got one of those. Then the gray and white. And then I think it was just after that we settled on the cheese grater case. And it's been that for quite some time, I think.
Since June 2003.
Yeah, that's right. I forgot that it goes back. I'm G5, thinking about since the Pro line has been updated.
Mm.
Not the case. You're talking about the case.
Yeah, just the outsides. Because the outsides of the iMacs, I mean, think about what the iMac looked like in 2000.
I don't have to. I've got one behind me. all my kit's old. It's not just me, is it? People never throw away Macs.
Yeah.
There you go.
My blue and white is still around.
I got my blue and white.
My original Mac Plus sitting over there. It needs a new new board, and I found a guy here in town that will actually fix it. I just got to get it down to him. So
I chuck him away all the time.
Yeah, but there's someone else's.
Did you see that? Somebody had posted somewhere. There was like a Flickr stream of like old Macs found in like abandoned buildings and things like that. That kind of came out this week and made the rounds. Well, it was very very interesting.
Andy, go ahead. I was just the fun part is like now that when they started introducing recycling mandates for CRTs. And most communities, you can't just chuck out like an old CRT in the trash anymore. You have to actually pay $10 to have it recycled. And so that's when you started really seeing like all of these really depressing looking Macs just sort of like sitting by the side of the road where someone just sort of pulled over, kicked it out, and then drove off. So it wouldn't be there. They wouldn't have to pay $10 to get rid of it anymore. So it really is like that dog that the family decides they don't want anymore. They just sort of like leave it in a field somewhere.
Go to the rest area.
It makes you a little sad because you imagine that maybe he it's like the brave little toaster, like that Mac SE is just hoping that his owner is going to come back and pick it up, and he just forgot himself. It's like you're playing that horrible scene in Toy Story 2 with Jesse being donated. That Andy, you're not going to take that Mac LC home with you. I don't care if you think it's depressed and it's sad. It's not feeling those things. You're just an idiot.
I think what we're going to do now we've got the cheese grater and it's kind of on its last legs and they could be doing a redesign, is we ought to start pushing for nicknames for all of the other stuff that's household implements. So we could have the Apple waffle iron or the toaster. Yeah, the toaster. The French toaster. Panini maker. Yes, it would have to be a panini. They wouldn't do toast. That's stupid of me. I'm sorry.
Toasters for Windows users.
Toasters for Windows users. Yes, that's very good.
Yes, and that it's affordable and accessible.
I just wanted to say the store was down and back up. That went a lot longer than I thought it would. Apple shareholder meeting happened this week. The directors were re-elected, thank God. There was a bit of grief over the share price, and Tim said that he was disappointed that the longer term wasn't being looked at. And he also said that there was going to be new categories.
Sorry. Does he know about Wall Street and... Oh,
they don't give a toss what Tim thinks.
No, they don't give a toss about the long term.
No.
I think the long term, the phrase is long term and Wall Street are not normally bandied around in the same sentence.
Agreed. But he said they were working on new categories. So there you go. That is the invitation to say what the bloody hell we like.
TV!
Watch. Oh, Jesus. TV, watch. Yeah. Cuddly toy. Well, I mean... Serious speculation. I should have been more narrow. Serious speculation. Who's got something sensible to say? Mr. Anatko, save us.
I really don't know. I mean, I was going to leap in by saying that they would make a block of milled aluminum with just the glowing Apple logo on it that cost $900. That would be the ultimate Apple product. It doesn't do anything but perpetuate brand presence and is the best block of aluminum with an Apple logo on it ever made. I really don't know. I think that they do want to go into wearable computing in some fashion because there's a lot of movement towards that wave. There's a lot of definition onto the society is really moving towards. We don't want to have one big, massive $2,000 computer on our hands. We want to have a lot of computers ranging from $100 to $800 that are at hand whenever we want to use them. But the problem is that Apple probably planted that story in the Wall Street Journal and the New York Times. It's easy to speculate that they at least want everyone to think that that's something that they're thinking of. But I think if they do go in that direction, it's going to be a lot like how we all knew that Apple was going to be building a tablet, but we really couldn't figure out what context they'd put it in, because they're definitely going to the Apple that made the iPad would not just have a wristwatch with a screen on it that can receive notifications from an iPhone. The Apple that made the iPad would figure out a way to make this $100, $200, $300 device seem like something that's actually essential and something that people, that other companies actually miss.
I think that's a great point, because it's not going to sell if it's just a watch.
Yeah, well, the Pebble watch, for instance, is really cool. I was at, show you the sort of people I hang out with. I was at a dinner party with about 10 people. Two of them were wearing Pebble watches. A third was waiting for his two Pebble watches to arrive. And it's a great project, and I support it emotionally, not with my dollars, but I support it emotionally. But for now, with a lack of software behind it, It is a $100 watch that tells you the time in a weird way, and if you set it up correctly, can show you who just text messaged you. And it's not the sort of thing where you're going to convince someone to spend $100 for that instead of $100 for something that might be a little bit more stylish. So unless the there's no mistaking the reasons why Google put out that Google Glass video and let Josh Topolsky spend an hour or so with it, because if they have any chance of selling this to people in late 2013 or 2014, they're going to have to show people, no, this isn't just a goofy thing you wear on your face that lets you take pictures from your point of view. This is going to solve problems for you. There is a Google Glass shaped hole in your life that this will spackle quite nicely. So if Apple were to make a watch, just like my iPad filled a hole in my computing roundup that I didn't know existed before, it's going to have to really make that case and make it with some nice, innovative design. So whether or not Apple can do that now, I'm not one of these Apple naysayers who says, oh, well, Apple's definitely lost it over the past 2 or 3 years. However, I can't help but notice that in 2012, they released a lot of really funky products that didn't make a whole lot of sense to me, with a lot of decisions where, I mean, they came out with the Retina MacBook, a MacBook Pro, which has a beautiful screen that is definitely a front-facing, wonderful feature, but this is a $2,300 laptop minimum that doesn't have an Ethernet port. And the reason why it doesn't have an Ethernet port is because they made it marginally too thin to accept that kind of connector. And then there's the iPhone 5, which again they went for a real aggressive design, which didn't really improve anything else other than the looks of it. It's a longer screen introduced into a marketplace where every consumer that's saying we want a bigger screen, and that's really the majority of people out there right now, are saying we don't want just to be a half an inch longer. We want a better reading experience. We want a better web viewing experience. So they missed that boat too. And then they came out with the new iMac, which was sort of, to me, compounded a lot of the problems that I saw with the new MacBook, in that here we have a desktop machine in which everything should be designed well. It should be beautiful. It should be a attractive device that you're very pleased with the aesthetics of. That is actually a useful feature, I think. But when you start sacrificing utility to make a super razor thin profile on this desktop machine, you know, you can make a case for why they decided to delete the DVD drive. I understand that optical drives are on the way out. It's kind of unfortunate that an expensive computer, they're not going to put in a mechanism that costs them all of like 12 cents to put in, but okay. But they were so committed to making this thin device that they put the SD card slot, the memory card slot, something that's actually important to people who are using this machine, and put it in a place that's so inaccessible, you really have to turn the thing around in order to get access to that slot instead of putting it on the edge. So I'm not skeptical that Apple could make a good watch or make a good wearable computer. I'm just saying that their string of hits is now a little bit wobblier than it was. I'm now thinking that I hope that they keep their eyes on the idea of, here's how people are going to relate to this technology, and we can't allow anything to get in the way of how people are going to relate to this new device. So I'm not skeptical. I just have a slightly more nervous eye on this kind of a project.
Anyone got anything else? Any other categories?
Do we have time for anything else? I'm sorry.
No, it's fine.
Andy and Marco, we do like to talk, do we?
Sorry.
Go ahead, Adam.
It's Adam's turn.
Sorry, Skype delays. I was just going to really quickly comment that I think Andy's points are very well made, especially about the sort of things that Apple has done recently with some of the products. And you know, you hope that when they're going to bring out a wearable device, like he's saying, it's going to be something that changes your life. But the focus is on the use case. That's what Apple is so good at, is focusing their products on how we're going to use them. And the couple of examples he gave, specifically things like the SD card slot on the iMac, I think also on the 21-inch model, the inability to do something simple like upgrade RAM. It's elegantly done, I think, on the 27-inch model. But these are details where this affects how you're using the product, and it almost makes you feel like someone wasn't paying attention. Like having that SD card slot on the back no one's going to use it. So why even have the slot there? Yet, you, like he's saying, you don't have an Ethernet port that a ton of people would want on a Pro machine. So, yeah, it does kind of make you a little bit worried that, you know, these aren't major slip-ups or major things, but it seems like they're, in those cases, putting design before function. And Apple is very good at, has always been very good at putting function and marrying that with design. So it's a little odd.
I just want to jump in. I'm sorry. That's exactly what I was talking about. We keep hearing about they've got this new curved glass technology. I'm just worried that Apple's going to say, "Oh, that's great. We can make a watch with a curved screen." Saying, "Okay, but what does this curved screen do? It's curved and it's beautiful. Woo! You're welcome." But what does it do? It's curved.
Exactly.
Nice. What was your point, DHM?
Well, I would hope, although it's kind of a forlornish hope, but I'm sure there is room for it, given that they're taking so much out of the new iMacs that, you know, that Pro users would need, and that the Mac Pro is actually gone, that there will be some kind of Pro product, even if, you know, adding the Pro back into the iMac to create an iMac Pro or a Mac Mini Pro or something would be, it's a shame that the entire Pro category is kind of dead on its feet. And I think there's some, I've got this niggling feeling that there's a way back into it for Apple by proing up the existing content existing machines.
I think there's a definite need for a bigger computer in a box than the Mac Mini's going to offer. The only thing that made me think about this idea of new categories is I just started thinking back to the base level. And everything that you get from any device, whether it's a computer or it's a phone or it's a pad, is going in your eyes and going in your ears. And everything that you put into that device is going from either your fingers or going from your mouth. And with the advent of Siri, it strikes me that it would be perfect for Apple to make some sort of wearable computing that doesn't make you look a complete knob when you put it on. And that's the problem with Sergey Brin. He's walking around with his glasses on, and he's saying this is the best thing since sliced bread. And everyone's going, "Maybe, but you look a twat." Right. And the thing is, you need, and this is maybe where the Siri integration comes in. If the eyes and the ears are not actually in the best place for where the eyes and ears should be when you're talking about a computer, they're great if you want to hunt something in the bush, but it's absolutely useless if you're talking about dealing with phones, because you've got to pick the phone up in front of your face. And what Apple need to do is think about the inputs, how they get the inputs into the ports of the person. And something that's linked with Siri for mouth, voice and ears, and then something that you can wear that doesn't make you look stupid would be ideal. I mean, that would be fantastic. No? Or have I gone too far there? Sorry.
Well, if they did really good integration where it's something even a little bit better. You realize that even like a Bluetooth earpiece, a lot of people think that you kind of look like a, you know, a rude word if you're one of these people walking around with a Bluetooth in your ear at all times. But I don't know. I think the best solution might be just not one whiz-bang device, but a way of unifying all those three things where Siri is, you've got your iPhone in your pocket. You might even have just your wired headphones on. Siri is now enabled to actually interrupt your music and say, "Oh, you wanted me to remind you have an appointment coming up in 10 minutes, or be able to ask Siri, "Hi, what's the, I'm taking a picture with my iPhone. What is this a picture of?" And it will actually do that sort of thing.
Mm. No, I mean, I think if you look at what's acceptable as if you want to follow fashion, you've got to look at what fashion accepts, and fashion accepts glasses and fashion accepts headphones. So there is no end of people on the tube wearing headphones and glasses. So that's where the wearable IT has got to come from. And there's those people wearing watches, but the watch is not down there.
I mean, the reason that people associate Bluetooth in-ear headphones with complete knobbers is that pretty much everyone that was using them, that's what they were.
But agreed.
For some reason, sitting on the tube looking like a total ass with a pair of dustbin-sized headphones on your head and a stupid hat crammed on top of it doesn't make you look like an ass, although it does. But from the fashion point of view, it's not like, I don't think there's anything intrinsically horrible about Google Glass. It's just the sort of the demographic that it's attracting is kind of a self-fulfilling prophecy.
You could really see Google Glass, when it comes out, being just a normal pair of specs. They've had these things so that they stand out and they grab the attention, and when it actually arrives, it's just a pair of Joe 90s.
But here's the thing, is what if you're wearing them and I don't want to be recorded? Like, this introduces a whole weird conversation now.
Well, if you're in public, you don't have a choice.
Well, here you do.
No, you don't.
Well, we don't have the CCTV like you guys do yet.
Yeah, I agree.
So, it's going to turn into like, you know, I sit down to have coffee with somebody, and if they turn it into a regular pair of glasses, then it's going to make everything this conversation of, you know, are those regular glasses? Are they Google glasses? If they're Google glasses, can you turn them off? Like, my hair is super fuzzy today. I didn't put on any makeup to come meet you. Like, you know what? Like, I don't want to have that conversation with everybody. And I feel like sort of the nice thing about it now is, like we were saying, you know, if that's the gear you're rocking this minute, that tells me a few things about you right now. First of all, you're not going to be the person I'm meeting for coffee. Let's start there.
Was it something I said?
But like, I don't want to have this conversation with everyone else I know. Like, I don't want to sit down with Adam to have coffee and be like, do you have your glasses on or are those regular glasses? And then have to be like, could you not? You know, because how do you know? You know, that's one of the things about like the video camera and stuff is like when you turn it on, there's the little red light. And if you don't have any indicator like that, then how do I know that you're not recording me telling you, oh my God, last night, let me tell you what happened. You know, maybe I don't want that story out for everybody. Maybe I'm only telling you and I don't want to be telling the internet.
Yeah. Well, that's already a problem, in that who knows if that person is going to later on blog about, oh, well, you know, we're talking to my dear, dear friend, and unfortunately, her sister's being a total idiot to her, and she was just crying and saying about how she's going to make them all pay somehow. I just hope she works out. It's like, okay, you don't have to. It's about picking the sort of friends who kind of understand that. I do think that it's interesting how complicated this design for wearable computing is going to be. I think part of Google Glass is that they kind of have to make sure that you look like kind of a twit wearing it, because I'm sure that society's not going to accept this unless they know for a fact that the device that you're wearing is in fact some sort of a capture device. And I think that remember the first EyeSight camera? I thought one of the most brilliant parts of that design was that it had like a little ring around the front of it that if you twisted it, actually closed an iris. And so there was a big white dot right in front of the lens. You could see that with one nervous glance, you could see, okay, there's no possibility that this camera is capturing video because the iris is closed. I can see a white disc blocking the lens. And it's possible that one of the most important features of Google Glass or something like it is just going to be a simple mechanical shutter that if you go like this and push it forward, you see a bright orange dot that sort of slides and covers the lens. So at least you know that it's mechanically not even possible for this camera to be taking my picture right now because there's something blocking the lens right now.
Meanwhile, you crash the car.
Well, and, I mean, it's the thing, like, you always see people who, on their MacBook Pros, I see this primarily on Macs, I don't see it as much on Windows machines, but you see the little piece of sticky note in the top center of the screen. It's the same principle. It's, I know for certain that even if something were to happen and somebody were trying to record me, there's no way that that's going on. So, well, I think the idea of it is cool. I want this to be something that Apple maybe gets into, because I feel like it's kind of the final frontier for technology. Like, there's some technology over there on my wall. There's some technology here in my pocket. There's some technology sitting here in front of me. That's how I'm talking to you guys. But as far as actually wearing it, like, I mean, I come as close to wearing my phone as I can. It's in my pocket or in my hand 24 hours a day. So that's as close as I can come to wearing my phone. But being able to have a watch that gives me a notification, being able to do something like that, I feel like this is one of those times when Apple's doing what Apple does, which is wait until it's ready. And they're going to come out with something sort of like MP3 players. Like, nobody really expected Apple to come out with an MP3 player. But when they did, it was great. And it was different than anything else on the market. And it really stepped up the experience of having an MP3 player. Yeah. And I think they're waiting in the wearable space for the same sort of thing. They've got the right watch, they've got right glasses, the right headphones, whatever it is that makes things, makes it an Apple experience to do whatever you're doing with wearable computing. I think that's going to be the case. And I can't wait to see what it's going to be, because I don't feel like there's a whole lot of other places they can go technologically, because I just don't think it's going to be a television.
But there's that also kind of points out that for all of the for all of the brickbats that a lot of Apple fans throw against Samsung and Microsoft by saying, oh, we'll see, all these people are just copying Apple. Apple really has made its business copying, not copying, but waiting for other companies to get there first, seeing what they make. More importantly than that, seeing how people react to what they're making, and then say, okay, here are the failure points of the netbook. People are buying them in droves, which means that there's an interest in really, really cheap computers that don't do everything that a main notebook does. But here's the pain points, and we're going to remove the pain points of it. So maybe they're certainly if they're working on a watch or they're working on wearable computing, they are thrilled with the idea of Google actually releasing Google Glass. They're thrilled with the idea that Samsung is going to be coming out with their own wearable watches, so that they can wait for those to go out, read all the reviews, buy them themselves, play with them, and figure out what they hate about them, and then build something in response that's way, 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 way better.
Good. I think we'll be loving whatever it is, and we'll wear it, and we'll love it.
Damn it, they know we'll buy it. That's the problem.
I think the one of the funniest things I heard someone comment on about a wearable iWatch sort of thing is like, well, you killed my watch with the iPhone, and now you want me to put one back on. It's a very interesting concept.
Yeah, absolutely. In-app purchases got a bit of stick this week, and there's a good discussion around this. It comes from the fact that Real Racing 3 was released, and everyone said, wow, what a fantastic game. But the problem is, you then have to fix your car, and it costs money to fix your car, which, of course, is an in-app purchase at £13. And or you have to sit and wait half an hour. It won't let you play it until you've got enough time elapsed till you can do it. So it's forcing you towards it. And also, people have said that they've paid some money to upgrade the car, and they've paid some money to fix their car, and it seems like the AI is deliberately oriented to create crashes. There's cars that stop the competition in the race, deliberately stops at the apex of a bend, so you come around a bend, wham, there they are, and you go straight into them, so you have to pay to fix your car, which I don't know if that's true or not, because I haven't played it. I won't buy it.
It's like the Russian damn racing game.
It is. I mean, from what people are describing, there's also been a story this week about a young lad who his mom and dad bought him Zombies versus Ninjas, and they downloaded it, gave him the iPad, and within 15 minutes he'd spent £1,700 on add-ons for it. Some of the add-ons were up in the £30 marks, and I think one of them was £69. So you're talking a $100 add-on in-game purchase.
I blame the consumer. I'm sorry. I'm not going to let us as buyers and consumers necessarily off the hook on this one. We're at least partially culpable. And this is something that I've been frustrating me for a long time, mostly because we're seeing this same sort of app model, and we just have to decide as consumers is this what we want, right? And otherwise, we're going to continue to see things like this. And where I'm going with this is, as app prices are being driven down, it's getting harder and harder for developers to sustain, especially if they have a number of employees, they have to do tech support. They cannot give their products away for free or sell them for a buck or two and continue to sustain that model for very long. You can if you have a breakout hit, but that's few and far between. And so consumers with their buying behavior are saying, we only want to pay so much for these games. You know, before we got our iPads and things like that on consoles, how much was a title? $50, $60, $70? And now you're saying, oh, $3 is too much. $4 is too much. So the developers are getting
$4 is highway robbery.
Highway robbery. But so developers, this is the developer response to say, we got to figure out how to make this model work. So they're making the model work. I think it's brilliant. You know, it's called real racing. What happens in a real race? Car breaks down around the corner. If you're not a good enough driver to swerve around it, your car is going to crash into it. And you're going to. So I think they've done a, you know, as frustrating as that might be, either pay $50 for the good, awesome game, or this is where you're going to be at. So
I wish you'd get an option, though. I think it would be cool if, like, there would be a $10 version of the game that maybe didn't have some of these limitations that I could buy if I wanted to, or I can use the free one and wait and do the in-app. And it would be nice. I know it would be a pain in the neck, but it would be nice to have an option, because If I play it and don't like it, then that's fine. But if I play it and I feel like it's worth $10, I feel like it's worth $20, I would like to have the option to pay for that. Now, on the other hand, there's a number of sort of Farmville style games where it's like time-based, like, you know, you plant your crops or you build your building or whatever it is you do, and then you have to wait for that to happen so that you can collect rent or whatever, you know, to score more points for stuff. And I like those kind of games, but a lot of those games are freemium and, you know, they want you to pay for the thing that makes everything go faster. And I don't want to pay for it. And I'm fine not paying for it. I would have paid a couple of dollars for the game, but I don't like that you're going, you know, this would be way more fun if you just gave me more money. No, sell me a $5 game and I'll play that. And, you know, does anybody remember a couple of years ago the wailing and gnashing of teeth over Infinity Blade being five entire dollars? Remember this?
Yes.
Yeah, and how, you know, again, highway robbery and like money grubbers and, oh man, it was ridiculous. And these same people probably don't think twice about, didn't Halo 4 come out at, or whatever the new Halo is, come out at $69.99, and people will pay that on the Xbox and not think twice. And like the economy of the App Store specifically is fascinating to me for this reason. My day job is for AgileBits. I work for 1Password. And one of the things that we hear from people a lot is about pricing. And because we put out a new version and it was a paid upgrade, because we can't, it's for everybody. We had to be fair to everybody. We put it on super sale when we released 1Password 4 for iOS. And the amount of venom directed at the support folks over the fact that there was a new version. The first version, first of all, came out many years ago. It's been years that people have had this. And so, you know, I bought it 4 years ago and I can't believe you're going to make me pay again.
Oh, you can't.
Like, it's insane to me because, and the thing about it is that the App Store is sort of driving this entitlement. And so I really want for there to be a better way for this to happen. I really, really do. And I'm fine buying a game if it's a fun game. Like, I bought Lego Harry Potter and I did not think twice. And when the next one came out, I bought it and I did not think twice. And Lego Harry Potter on the iPad is one of the funnest games I've played in I don't even know how long. I don't play a lot of games, but I play the crap out of that. And I'll buy the app, I'll buy the game if there's value in it. I've bought OmniFocus titles. I've bought other sorts of utilitarian apps that are not necessarily cheap, and it's because it's a good deal. And so if it turns out that what Real Racing is doing is something deliberate to make you pay, I feel like that's crossing a line, and that's a slope.
Yeah. Andy, you had something to say.
It is a problem in that, yeah, there are a lot of whiners who are never going to want to pay anything for anything ever. And so, unfortunately, a lot of those people own iPhones. And that's also one of the reasons why the game market on Android is such a horrible situation, because piracy is so rampant that people are not even willing to pay the $5 or $3 for a game. They'd much rather pirate it. And because they have a platform that allows them to flip a switch and run unsigned content, that's what they're going to try to do. But my worry is that when you make the move away from give me money and I will enhance the game experience for you to I'm going to try to monetize. I'm going to try to get people to spend as much money out of in-app purchases as possible. It becomes kind of it really becomes a problem, because it's fascinating when you read about how electronic casino games are created. That it's not just simply, I'm going to put in a quarter, I'm going to pull the slot machine, I'm going to wait to see if it pays out, and then I'm going to, oh, well, geez, I won $4. Great, I'll put in some more money. It really is a complicated science of understanding exactly how neurological chemistry works and making sure that the machine is letting you have that little hit of happy juice at exactly the right moment and keeping you in sort of a state of a sort of a fugue state in which you're sort of the machine is almost intentionally flipping off a number of switches inside your brain, the sort of switches that would cause you to realize that, wait a minute, I've won back maybe $30, but I've put $200 in this machine. I should stop right now. It's been 4 hours. But they're really good at managing that. It's not an accident how that sort of stuff works. And when we're starting to see reports of the game studios applying that exact same sort of methodology to creating games with in-app purchases. It's not just simply, oh, well, if you had this better sword, maybe you'd be able to get back this level, because I notice you've died like 8 times in a row. Here's how much it will cost you to get that sword. It's more like, if we make this offer to this person at exactly this point in the game, their brain is at a point which they are not thinking clearly and rationally, and they will probably make that $1.99 purchase without thinking much of it. And by manipulating that kind of neurological response, that's when you start to get into that kind of problem where you wonder if it's an ethical thing. And we haven't even talked about the idea of, you have oftentimes it's little kids who don't understand that $100 will let you play the game for an extra 20 minutes and have a lot of fun, but that's $100 real damn dollars. And here's how long your mom or your dad have to work to earn $100. So yeah. I agree that 100% we really would like, I like to have that kind of option. I like to have that sort of choice. And also let's also point out Apple's sort of complicity in this. If Apple had created a system by which you can try something for free, have a demo version of this available for an hour, and then it automatically turns off and kicks you back to the App Store, maybe this wouldn't have needed to happen. I mean, in-app purchases in part was created because the frustration of not being able to really show a user, here's how well this app works, please try this and then give us your money, because you clearly can't do that with a collection of screenshots and 100 one star, this should be free, like, this is just like Tetris only with cars reviews on the App Store.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's some, I mean, the chat room's gone absolutely ballistic here. They're moving faster than I can read them. It is a parent problem, says 10X in the chat room. For the majority of the purchase system works fine, so why lock it down for the minority of idiots who let their kids on an iPad unsupervised? Darren's got a good point there, because one of the things is, the iPads that the kids have got accesses to, there is a requirement for no in-app purchase already set up. I've put that on there, and I've also stopped them from deleting games and adding games. But the one thing that I've got as an issue with Apple is that Apple don't ship the iPad with that as the default. And that's where the learning process should take place. It should be locked down to begin with. And then when you press an in-app purchase button and it doesn't work, there should be a script that comes up and says, that's locked by default, here's how to unlock it, and they'll show you what to do and how the dangers of it. It by default, it's the open system. The 15-minute all-you-can-eat password is there as the first option in iPads when they come out in iPhones. Darren has said that he has also looked at the Real Racing 3, and he said it's on the verge of taking the piss. So, which I think it is. I mean, there's discussions that I saw yesterday that were talking about the AI doing the. They said that the driving techniques of the drivers was Maldonado-esque, and Maldonado's a guy who had several crashes last year in F1. So there is also an issue. I mean, Will's not here, but Will had a burger making game for his lad, and he had an in-app purchase requirement for that came up. And when he went to try and buy it, it was £35 to buy the mayo to make the burger that they needed. You know, and that's on a kid's game. There's kid game that we've come across in the past that have been £2.49 to buy, and you get level one. And then when you get in there, you then realise that the other 10 levels that were on there, you have to pay for. That can't be right. You know, if you're going to give it as freemium, that's fine. Give it a free, and then caution that there are in-app purchases with it, and a label that says there are in-app purchases on this game. But there needs to be some regulation, I think.
I think the conversation we need to have, though, is what? Why are developers even considering things like this? And we can argue whether, you know, they're doing nefarious stuff or not, and some are. I know. And maybe this was deliberate, maybe this was not. But why? What is in the ecosystem driving these guys? And I think Andy's right. Partially, the culpability is Apple. I think also partially the culpability is us as consumers and this whole idea that, you know, if you don't give it to me for free or 99 cents, I'm going to give you a bad review. It's also on the developers to kind of learn that this is the new economic model and figure out ways to make it work. And I think that's what they're trying to do. The thing is there's no guidelines. This is a new area and they're having to sort of bump their way around in the dark to figure it out. You know, in the case of 1Password, I was happy to pay, you know, for a whole new version. And I understand why they had to do it. But a lot of consumers aren't that sophisticated. You know, I know them all. I know what they're up against. I know that they can't offer a paid upgrade. I think it's ridiculous that they have to get around the fact that they can't give a paid upgrade to loyal customers. They have to sell it to new customers at a reduced price when they come out with a new version. I mean, these are all things that are in the ecosystem that need to be addressed and fixed. So I think this is more a conversation about how things have changed and how we're going to better deal with them and come up with better mechanisms. And for sure, part of the thing that needs to change is Apple needs to start listening and recognize that there's certain parts of the old model that worked really well and made sense. You know, trial versions, paid upgrades, those things need to happen. Developers need to have those in order to have a sustainable model, I think. I don't know of another good creative way around it, but maybe there is something out there and maybe we need to find that. I don't know.
Mm-hmm. You have an incoming call from Dr. Happy Mac.
Sorry, Kelly. He got
bumped.
He's back.
Okay.
He's back.
Did I miss that? Did I miss the only bit that I had some genuine comment to give on?
Just Kelly was making a point, and then it's your turn, DHM.
Yeah. So the thing I think is frustrating is that there's a certain amount of this couldn't possibly be my problem from parents who hand an iPad to their child with the ability to do all of these things and spend all of this money. And
well, I think you've got to bear in mind, Kelly, that the majority of parents that are out there, there's a significant number, if not majority of people out there who we give them an iPad, they'll understand the basic concepts of how to use it, but they won't understand purchasing scheme process.
Exactly my point. Because if you're going to hand it to a kid, then if you're going to, I feel like, now I'm not a parent and I know that somebody's probably going to have a cow about this. I look forward to your letters. If you're going to hand something to your kid, if you're going to expose your child to something, I feel like you should have some idea what that's going to do. If I expose my kid to Sesame Street, I have a pretty good idea how that's going to go. If I expose my kid to Cinemax after 9 o'clock at night, I have a certain expectation of what that's going to be, what that experience is going to be. If I'm going to expose them to Ozzy Osbourne records, I know what to expect. Like, I know what that is. I know what that does. If I give my kid the remote control and don't monitor the TV, I don't know what's going to happen. If I hand my kid the keys to the car, I only have a certain amount of knowledge of how that's going to turn out if the kid is unsupervised. And I feel like with an iPad, it's the same thing, and that because technology hasn't been around long enough for a lot of people, there's a reason that my talk at Macworld was about security basics. Because everybody tells you to lock your doors and take your keys with you and roll up your windows and don't leave all your expensive stuff sitting in the front seat when you leave your car at the mall or whatever. But nobody tells you how to do those sorts of things on your computer because it hasn't been around long enough for people to just sort of pass that information around. It's not common knowledge. And I think the same thing is happening with mobile technology, just like it has been happening forever. Not forever, but as long as I can remember, with regular computers being networked together. And I think there's a certain amount of knowledge that people are going to have to sort of sign up for if they're going to get an iPad, if they're going to hand it to the kid, if they're going to give the kid the old iPhone with no SIM card in it as an iPod Touch. There's a certain amount of knowledge that you have to embark upon getting for yourself in order to do that.
I'm going to just throw a caveat in there, though, Kelly.
Okay.
So Ellis, a couple of years ago, he's got pocket money. He does little chores and stuff. He gets his money. He spends it on what he wants. He buys Skylanders and that kind of stuff, and fine. And we do our very best to vet everything for him. I would like to think we're responsible parents. A couple of years ago, he decides he wants to buy a single that's out at the moment because he likes dancing to it. CeeLo Green, forget you, right? So me and Sharon have been hearing this on Heart FM. local radio station. What a great catchy tune that is. No problem at all. So we go out and we let him buy with his own money. Forget you. And unfortunately, because he's at an age where he's like, you know, oh, I'm independent, I want to do it myself. Well, it's okay, no worries, mate. You go and browse, you learn how to browse HMV. So he browses down HMV, he picks up the CD, he brings it back to the counter, he buys it, he puts it in his bag, he brings it home. He shoves it up in his room on his CD player, and we're downstairs, and the first thing we hear is Not Forget You.
No, it's the real one.
It's the real one. And Ellis, yeah, I'll give them their due. There's an explicit tag on the box. But everything in the way that that song is sold raises no indication to me whatsoever that it's an explicit song.
Right.
Because they've got the radio broadcast safe version. And if you look at the iPad, the way that the iPad's sold is, wow, it's fun, it's great, it's easy. You just swipe, you just do, and what about that? And everyone goes out and buys it on that basis and think, well, it's Apple because Apple banned porn, so therefore, here you go.
But I think that at the end of the day, there's the caveat to the whole thing is that this kid, you know, he was refunded his money. Mm. You know, and I think that there's a case for that. To paraphrase the sort of Americans, one of you Americans' favorite phrases, in-app purchases don't kill people. Bad developers kill people.
There's a truth.
And I think it's down to the morality of the person that is developing and deploying the in-app purchases. And there's two ways to do it. There's the cynical and the cold-hearted way, which is to look at this and say, how can I maximally squeeze everything out of this product? How can I deliver a product that is essentially seemingly free, but appears, you know, unplayable without some
But that's some what serious some of the criticism's been, yeah.
Yeah. Or you say to people, fine, you know, there's this is the game, you can play the basics. I mean, basically, the overview we took with the Wiper apps was that, you know, it's a paid app, so it's not freemium, but there is going to be an app purchase, was you've paid your money, this is the game, you are getting what you paid for. In order to widen the scope of this game, to make it, you know, more playable for more people, you can buy in extra content, but if you choose not to do that, you'll have the game that you said you would, and we'll still update it, and we'll still add new content in. Mm. And also, you know, the companies that are approaching in-app purchase from a genuine, if you want to call it genuine way, will stand by their in-app purchases and say, yes, I'm sorry, obviously that was wrong, here's your money back, we didn't mean it. Whereas, you know, the people that are the milking it and treating it as a cash cow, they'll be the ones like the mobile phone companies that turn around and say, yeah, I know you thought that you could download 52 high definition movies from the airport on your tethered iPhone without having to pay for it, but you do. You know, that's the sort of the litmus test will be how these companies deal with the outlying situations. And I don't think you want to be hobbling the whole pony just because, you know, there's always going to be issues around the edges of things. And it basically is how you deal with those issues around the edges. Do you want to legislate? Do you want to ban in-app purchases in effect? Or what? Mm. And I think the market should be, you know, if people feel that somebody like EA have gone too far the other way with Real Racing 3, that is overly cynical, don't buy the app, you know, teach them a lesson.
There you go.
Well, that's the don't buy is the same as switch off, and you're not buying it. You're not buying the in-app stuff. I agree. But then if you think, okay, well, I just need, it's only £13. The game's worth 13 quid. So I pay 13 quid to get my fix it kit. And then lo and behold, the cars deliberately crash into me so that fix it kit quantity starts getting eaten up and up and up and up until I have to buy another fix it kit. That's the problem. That is a serious problem.
That would be down to, as I was saying, you know, the developers, that's like, you know, that's the sort of thing where you feel that the developers have dimmed the lights, have chanted Latin and have channeled Satan into their computers to enable them to move off.
That's it. That's what they've done.
But the response to that, and the correct response to that, is not to buy another fix-it kit, is to just delete the game from your app, put a review on the store,
never
buy anything they do again.
No, but hang on a minute.
Wait about it on a podcast.
Yeah, but that's the point, is when you say I've given £13 for a game because it would make it playable, and then it doesn't actually make it playable anymore, you're not renting this thing.
Right.
Well, it would. I mean, yes. You've given them £13. They've given you the kit. You've used it up. You need another £13. It's up to you to decide whether that is value to you or not. And it's such a sliding scale. Some people would say, "Yeah, that was such an awesome experience. I don't care. I will buy another one."
And add in a 9-year-old with autism who is playing the game that they love that now suddenly stops, and mum and dad are saying, "No, you're not having another £13." Jesus, mate, that's it's not naive, Andrew. I think it's simplistic, and it is a very, very complex issue. I think Andy was right and Adam's right in what they've said. There is no simple way of dealing with this, but there has to be a structure. There has to be a process that Apple must put in place that says if you're going to develop games, you must at least give a fair shout to people about what this entails. Because, I mean, my lad gets obsessed with games very easily, and we are very careful about what we choose for him. And if I'd have given him Real Racing 3, there's a free game, Ellis. It won't work, Dad. What do I need to do? Oh, £13. All right, I'll pay £13 because he said it's a really good game. And then a week later, he's back because he's driven it like crap and he's crashed it everywhere, and another £13 comes out. And then we have to have the conversation, and he's not able to deal with the adult world of how much £13 costs.
No, I wasn't saying that. I was more referring to the fact that applies. This sort of ban them, don't buy it again. You know, it's a way of handling developers that have stepped out of any kind of. I mean, in some ways, I think EA have gone beyond the pale on this. They are deliberately doing this, and there isn't an easy way to deal with developers that have decided to game the system in that way.
Yeah,
I mean, think that there's a. You know, there is an in-app purchase system, and it can be managed in an effective way. And I think developers that want to approach in-app purchases in a moral and in a way with integrity will always work within a system that helps everyone, helps the gamer buy what they want, helps the developer make their money, helps everyone come back for more. But you know, you're going to get these people, like at the moment it appears EA who are
gas.
You know, they are deliberately.
Predatory.
Well, Gaspode in the chat
the
room.
Done this, and
it is quite predatory, yeah.
I think that's the problem with this. The reason it's particularly chapping to most people in this particular case, because this isn't like Smurf Village or whatever the last big in-app purchase flap was over. This is something where you can't play until this has happened, or you can't play very well until something has happened. And if it's true that they're doing this deliberately, I find that really frustrating. So,
Gaspole in the chat room has said, just stop in-app purchases. And I think that's absolutely the wrong thing to do. There is no question that in-app purchases is the way forward. I think Adam's exactly right on that. This is the model. People are demanding less. You have to have in-app purchase. I'm not suggesting that at all. Alex has come up with some good suggestions. There should be an advertised maximum amount which you can reach if the app is purchased. So free to £9.99 or free to £100 or whatever it costs, which I think is a great idea. I like that one.
Here's the point. Angry Birds, you pay for it and it still has ads.
Yeah.
The thing I want to say here is what happens now with a company like EA, and I'm gonna have to continue to follow the story, but the question is, how do they react to the feedback, right? Because this is them experimenting. Like I was saying, developers are kind of having to figure out, okay, how can we take what Apple has given us in the models that we have and the consumer behavior and turn this into something that's viable. And we've seen tons of these experiments, and a lot of them blow up like this. The question is now, how do they react? Is there a fundamental flaw in the game mechanics? Was it not supposed to work like this? And now that people are using it, are they going to adjust it to correct it? Are they going to refund money? Are they going to take this feature out and put something else in place? You know, what happens at this point is really where it comes into play. And so their reaction is very important at this point, I think.
Well, part of EA's problem,
but we're going to see a lot of
experimentation.
They also
put everything on sale all the time. So, you know, it's Arbor Day. All our games are $2, which is another thing that I think is sort of untoward on a lot of apps part, which is sales often. If you have a sale once in a while, I think that's a different thing. But if you're going to be, I'm trying to think who it is here. Like here we have Macy's, and Macy's has a sale. Like it's the today ends in Y sale. Come in now, you know, and like, they're always having some sort of sale, and it tends to be on the weekend. So I don't go buy anything at Macy's during the week. I buy things at Macy's on a day that starts with S because I'm going to get a deal.
Okay.
And I think that same thinking is happening in the App Store as well, because EA does put everything on sale for every holiday, and they will pick goofy things to put things on sale for too. So, like, it's always on sale. So I don't think I've ever paid full price for an EA game. And I think that is probably part of the issue, is if they're looking for ways to make money, then maybe they need to knock $2 off the price of all their games and then not put them on sale most of the time.
Andy, last word.
Well, it's not about lowering the price. It's about creating a false sense of urgency. It's the same reason why. I'm not sure. I don't know if it's the same in the UK, but it is not possible to buy a mattress for anything less than 60% off the full retail price. Because no matter what day you go in, there's always, well, you know, we have a special on this Sealy model. It's 50% off, but that ends next week, until it becomes 58% off. It's like, you feel as though it really traps into that idea that I was just curious about this app. Oh, wait, you mean it's on sale for a limited time? Well, I better buy that right now. $4.99 instead of $10. Wow, I better buy this right now. And then you check back in like a month and a half later. Oh, it's still $4.99. Don't I feel kind of stupid?
It's a good conversation that we've had there. I've really enjoyed that. I have to say, I really didn't think we'd reach any kind of conclusion that we haven't reached anyway. So... But it's something that they've got to deal with. Got to.
We've reached a conclusion. I think we all agree that
it's complex.
That something needs to change, and that people the suck. Only way it's going to change is if Apple does it.
People suck. There's a show title. Yes. It's
and if
complicated.
You can't bite your butt with both hands in a map, don't buy an iPad and give it to your kid after you hook it to your Visa.
That's simple. You see, simple, simplistic. Let's not start again. This podcast and
he
all
doesn't
the
have kids, remember.
Yeah. This podcast and all the others is brought to you by UK2.net. They're fantastic. You've got to support these guys. They're absolutely brilliant. They give us all the bandwidth, they keep us afloat, and they do great deals for our listeners. They really look after our listeners. There's a couple of people who tweeted out this week saying what great service they've got from UK2. All you've got to do, go to britishtechnetwork.com, use the sponsors link. Use the click through to UK2, buy what you want, come back and use on the sponsors page all of the offer codes that are in there, and you save yourself a bloody fortune. We've got an offer code for everything that UK2 sell. So you're going to save money, and you're going to keep this network afloat by going through our link so that they know that we sent you. And they said that you lot are buying loads of stuff. So from the bottom of my heart, mate, thank you ever so much for whatever you've bought. And also the Bash banner is going up next week. Tickets will go on sale. You can book your ticket and you can come here and you can get pished with me and all the others. We're going to have fun. It's in July. It might rain, but who cares? We got inside this time. We got a proper dwelling for bashes, for parties. With a garden. Right. And if anyone out there actually is around the Birmingham area and they've got a really good band, send us your tape and we'll pick a band to play live. And you get your exposure. There we go. And you'll
That's
be on
awesome.
The podcast. That's a great idea. I've just had that idea. I'm pretty proud of myself for that one.
That's fantastic. I wish I knew a band over in Birmingham there that would play. Yeah.
I know a band. I'll send you their demo stuff.
Do it. Do it. As long as they're going to play for free, though, that's the only thing. I ain't paying.
Yeah, no, I'm sure they will be fine.
I'm a tight ass. Right. Have we got any cool things? Adam, start us off, sir.
Oh, you know what I'm going to pick? This thing
Real Racing 3?
Bartender. a little utility. Do you know this utility?
I
started to have this problem, especially when I would give presentations to my Mac user group. It happened the last time I gave a presentation. You know, you got all this stuff now that sticks things up in your menu bar, and that menu bar starts getting larger and larger and larger. And it's fine when you're like me and I dock my Mac at home and I've got this large 27-inch screen or 24-inch screen, whatever this HP thing is I have, and everything fits. Well, you go hook up to a projector and you're in an app and I discover suddenly I'm missing that critical menu bar item that I need access to because the main menu is covering it up and I can't find it. I can't get to it. And so the whole thing was a mess. And so I finally decided to do something about it. And I found this great little utility called Bartender that gives you a little sub menu bar that you have full control over. You can put items onto, so you can drag them out of your main menu bar. So I have nothing but now, I think, the clock and my battery and my fast user switching and Safari in my menu bar. Everything else is now in this little drop down bartender bar. And you can move the things around. You can put Apple ones down there. You can move where it is on your screen, so you can slide it left or right. It has some great hotkeys. So if you want everything to be back up in the main menu bar, you can hit a hotkey and they'll all jump back up there. You could even completely remove all of your menu bar icons and just use the hotkey to toggle them on and off. That's what you want to do. So it just gives you a lot of flexibility over those menu bar items. And it's like $15 US, whatever that translates to into pounds. And then it's just great. They have a free trial. I tried it for like half a day and I'm like, I'm buying this
good
thing.
One.
So
yeah, that sounds good. Cause that menu bar really is filling up for me. Definitely. Andy, what have you got? Sorry, go ahead, Kelly.
Put up there that's you can put some of the system stuff up there. So there's like Dropbox is generally syncing and generally working. I don't need to see it, but I like to be able to, if I need to. So yep. I have it in Bartender. And the other nice thing about it is, particularly if you're giving a presentation to a technical group of people, they're all looking at your menu bar going, ooh, what's up there? What do you have that I don't have that's cool and neat? Because that's always what I do. As soon as somebody plugs their computer into the projector, I'm like, what have you got running? What is your desktop? What do you have like wedged over in the corner? What's the geek tool little script that you've got going in the top right corner? I want to know all that stuff. And so if you're keeping all that away, I may be paying more attention to what you're actually saying. But Bartender is phenomenal, and they're really responsive. I have found I started with it when it was in beta and gladly handed over my money for it. And as they find things that don't work, as they find things that like in a incremental system update crashes, they're usually really good about making sure that they get that stuff fixed as soon as possible and making things work better within the drop down, and it's just a wonderful experience all around.
Thank you, Kelly. Andy, what have you got for us, mate?
this is a really cool simple device, simple product. When you're using your iPad, you do this all the time where it's got a cool speaker, but of course it's sort of facing the wrong way, and so if there's a lot of noise in the room, you'll sort of cup your hand around it to sort of redirect the sound more towards you. And if you go on YouTube, there are a bunch of people who say, I took this Dixie cup from McDonald's and made it and fashioned it into a sound redirector. And there are also a bunch of different, like if you go to Macworld Expo, the big, long, bizarre style lines of people who've made little iPad and iPod accessories. Weird little, too expensive, too complicated ways of doing the same thing. So this is not a device you might be unfamiliar with, but it's the best one. It's called the Soundbender. And really, this is all it is. It is not a skosh more complicated than it needs to be. It's just a plastic sort of shell sort of thing that attaches to the your iPad magnetically. So it's got a magnet on the back there. So it automatically aligns itself and puts itself exactly where it needs to be. And it's $12, $12 even, $12.99, something like that. So it's cheap, it's durable, it's plastic, it works, and it's not complicated. So it's available in a range of fashionable colors as well. So we've been talking about Google Glass. We've been talking about an Apple Watch. And I do like things that are revolutionary and new and very technical. But you like to see also, you gotta give props to a very simple idea that's executed as well as you imagine this could possibly be executed. And especially with a reasonable price. I've seen items like this that weren't built quite so well. And they said, well, surely because it's made out of CNC milled aluminum, people are willing to spend $40 for it. No, they really aren't. But it's CNC milled aluminum. Yeah, they don't really care about that. All they want to do is they want to do this only without having to use one of their hands with it. Could you make it out of plastic? Like, if we had it out of plastic, well, it would be a cheap $12 item. Bingo! That's what they did. Soundbender, you can get it at thesoundbender.com.
Thank you, mate. That's a really good pick. Last night, I was doing exactly what you're talking about, trying to watch the F1 practice stuff. And I ended up putting a bowl and balancing this bowl behind the iPad so it just covered the speaker. It worked really well, but I'd have given it up for $12 quite happily because I was going to break the bowl on my iPad in the end. Kelly, what have you got for us, girl?
Okay, I'm going to show you two of them. So we're going mobile. Stick with me here. I have two things that...
Vomit cam.
One of them is a bonus. But my first pick is this here from XTG Technology, which is a wall outlet. You can see I've got three power outlets here, and then I have two USB ports.
Ah.
And the reason this is awesome is because normally what you see when you... Let me readjust my grip here. Normally what you see when you look at the USB outlet sort of thing is you have to take out the existing outlet that you have in the box and everything, and you have to replace that and put it back. And that involves like live wires and screwdrivers, and you know, sometimes that's a bad scene. Here's why this one is awesome. It just plugs in to the outlet you already have.
Great.
And so pop it in, lined up right. There we go. And then it's also surge protecting. And the other nice thing about this is that it's a nice little nightlight, so you can have a low glow in a room. Like generally this lives in the kitchen, but since I'm downstairs in the new digs today, it came down here to charge my iPad. But this thing is super awesome. And then today's bonus pick, I just decided to pick because Andy's here. And I'm going to show it to you. This, as we were talking about old Macs earlier, this is my Macquarium.
Oh.
And this Macquarium is an SE30, and I'm going to put it there so you can see inside there's gravel in it. It has held water. It has held fish. And I made this based on instructions I downloaded from the internet that were written by Andy Anatko.
Oh!
Back in 1992 or something.
Yeah, and the thing that I remember the most about it is that there were two warnings on the instructions, and the first warning was, this might void your warranty, but if you take it to some Apple repair facilities, they may not notice. And the second warning was, if you do this, it probably won't run Word 6 anymore, but you weren't doing a very good job of running it now, so it's really okay.
Good man. Well so done, Andy.
The first time I met Andy was at... And Andy probably doesn't remember this, but I met Andy at the Extensis booth at Macworld Expo in 2007, I think. 2007 or 2008. And when he came by, because he said, I don't want to have to do laundry. Does anybody have any shirts left? And so I said, if you come by and say hello to me, I'll give you one. And he came by and said,
well, hey, hello. And all he wanted was a shirt.
Lovely. Yeah. Came by and said hello. And the first thing I blurted out to him before I like figured it out, because I was very impressed that Andy Anatko was going to come by the booth, was I said, I want to let you know I built a Macquarium based on your instructions, and they were awesome, and thank you for putting those online for me to use. So, there it is.
Kelly wants to know if you'll sign a butt lighter.
No, I don't.
DHM, what have you got for us, mate?
I've got an iPhone app, which you do have to pay for.
Oh, and no.
That is no, you'd be relieved to know, there's no in-app purchase.
Wee!
Sorry?
Wee! Go on.
Yes, it's called Typography Insight, and it's a little app that's really useful and helpful to explain to people the beauty of typography and why you should pay at least some attention to it when you're designing. But sorry, are you done?
And you paid for that?
So, yeah, but it's beautiful. It's got all these typefaces in it, and you can overlay one typeface with another, and you can see the difference in the tails and the descenders and the ascenders, and you can see why it looks fonts look more open than other fonts and more legible. And oh, no one else likes type, do they?
I think it's incredible. Steve Jobs did, just a little bit.
Oh, also there's a One Direction app you can get, which apparently is quite exciting if you like One Direction like my daughters do. There you go. I like type. I used to be a designer. I find type quite interesting.
Used to be.
You should throw on the bonus of the documentary Helvetica, which is excellent.
It is good, yes. But also, if you're after a documentary to watch, Americans, you can watch it. It's fantastic. It's not over here yet. Rodriguez documentary, Searching for Sugar Man. Okay.
All right.
I'm kidding. I'm sorry. I'm only joking. God,
but it's an awesome story. The guy was like, my wife's South African, and he was a huge, huge star in South Africa. And he kind of made some albums, and then he vanished, and the record company lost track of him, and he didn't have any contracts. And he's kind of like a bit like Carlos Santana, but he disappeared, and he didn't realize that all around the world he'd become this major recording artist, and he was working in an auto shop or somewhere, and he discovered him and said, "Oh, hey, look, by the way, you're this massive international star.
We've got some checks for you."
Yes.
Didn't that get an Oscar nominated?
Yes.
Yeah.
My pick. Excuse that snort. Breathing in rapidly. My pick is the BookBook from 12 South for the Retina MacBook Pro. Very specifically, I'm saying the Retina MacBook Pro. Now, I don't own a Retina MacBook Pro, but the reason I'm picking it is because you can have one of these. Hey! And you don't have to have the Retina MacBook Pro one. You can have one for any of your MacBooks. Okay, they're running a competition with us again. Thank you very much to 12 South. They're beautiful stuff. One of these BookBooks can be yours. You can specify whatever model you want for whatever computer you've got, etc. But specifically, they've released one for the Retina MacBook Pro, which is why they're publicising it and they're running this competition with us. Excuse me. All you've got to do is answer one simple question, and this beautiful piece of loveliness in any fashion could be yours. So, the question is dead simple. It is now 5 o'clock on a Friday, bang on, as it happens, and the markets have now closed in the UK. So, therefore, the exchange rate is set for the whole weekend. These podcasts will be going out on Saturday, because I'm working on Sunday, and all you've got to do is send me an email that says 12 South Competition in it, and you've got to tell me what the price is of the Retina MacBook Pro BookBook is, in sterling, if you convert the dollar price directly. So there you go. What is the price of this in the current exchange rate at 5 o'clock on Friday, as it was closed at the stock exchange, for the BookBook? It's $79.99 on their website, so there's a starter for 10. And all you've got to do is tell me what the price is in sterling based on the exchange rate that it is at 5 o'clock on Friday night. There you go. Whoever's closest wins. Everyone's going to... Someone's going to win. I'm not going to just say, oh, well, no one got it exactly, so I'll keep it for myself. Someone is going to win this, I promise. Okay? Whoever's the closest wins a BookBook. And it's a good prize. Come on. $80 worth. And they'll ship it straight to you as well. There we go. Where can we get a hold of you, Mr. Christensen?
You can find me over at maccast.com and also occasionally over at WHC podcast, which is the We Have Communicators podcast.
Excellent. Okay, good stuff. Isn't that done with Jeff?
Jeff Gamet? Yeah. Yes.
As well,
as Michael Johnston. Yeah.
Good. Jeff was on the big show last night. Rather good. Really enjoyed him. Mr. Renatko, where are you, sir?
You can find my tech column at the Chicago Sun-Times, suntimes.com. You can also go to anatko.com for my blog. I'm also the squirrely at Shine Anatko at Twitter. Good luck spelling my last name. That's your prize for being able to figure out how to spell my last name correctly. Yeah. You get to read my tweets.
That's good. Someone in the chat room just said, do we need to put an address too in the email that we send as well? Yes, you do. It's britishtechnetwork@gmail.com. There you go. Send the email to britishtechnetwork@gmail.com and you could win the BookBook. Sorry. Kelly, where are you, Mrs.?
You can find me on the unofficial Apple weblog. I also host the TalkCast there on Sunday nights. You can occasionally find me here. And
in the bar, drinking Jägermeister.
I'm behind it right now. You can also find me on Twitter and app.net as Verso.
You've obviously been at the bar because it's behind you.
Well, part of it.
Yeah. And Mr. Dr. Super Hacky Mac, where are you?
At Dr. Happy Mac. And you can find me there at www.drhappymac.co.uk. And you can pop along to sirencestersoftwareconcern.com to have a look at all the four now apps. The album one is the best one. If anyone wants to download, I think on reflection, famous people are famous, but album covers are fun.
Okay, good. Cover wiper.
Album wiper.
Album wiper. Jolly good. Right. I'm Ewan Rankin. You can get me at Ewan Rankin on Twitter, and we'll be back next week with the Mac Show, the Big Show, the Photo Show, and the Gamer Show, and the IO Show, and I'll listen to them all. They're all fantastic. Have a good weekend. See you next week.